broadcasting from Melbourne, Victoria. You're listening to the Investor Exchange. Tune in each week and listen to the guys from United Global Capital discuss the topics that matter the most to your finances. Each episode will help you separate the noise from what really matters, giving you timely and actionable information you can use. We'll cover areas related to financial markets, property, politics, personal finance, and the economy. Now, here's your host, Stephanie Sumner.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to the latest installment of the Investor Exchange, and this will be our last episode for the year. Joining me in the studio is Brett Dickinson.
Hey, mate. And we're doing this in the afternoon.
We are having an afternoon session.
With a cold beverage rather than a hot one.
That's right. And Joel Hewish.
Good afternoon, everybody. Yes. And Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas. To all of you out there.
Clink, clink, gentlemen.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers. Very good. Thank you. Good times. Many more of these to follow over the Christmas period.
Yes, especially with the heat wave that's going through right now.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's the best way for us to beat the heat with a cold one or two, maybe even three on Christmas Day. We'll see what happens.
Only three.
Yeah.
Joel, you'll be celebrating internationally.
I am, yes. We take our annual trip over to Hawaii and take a nice little 3-week break over there, which will be fantastic. For those clients, though, our office is still open, so don't worry. We're still working and keeping an eye on the markets while everyone else is away skiing, beaching,
yep,
whatever it might be that you do over this time of the year.
Yeah, that's right. I remember last Christmas holiday, and I put holiday in inverted commas, we were having Skype conversations while you were in a tiki bar in Hawaii.
Contemplating the crash.
That's right.
It's a bit different this time around.
It is.
Thank you, the Fed, for making life a little bit easier this time of Christmas. This year at Christmas.
Yeah.
You've had a number of years in Hawaii where you haven't been able to take your eye off the ball, though.
We've had our challenges.
We've had our challenges over the Christmas period.
Yeah.
Life doesn't stop.
No, it doesn't. No. But we've got through it every time, which is good.
Yeah. Yep, exactly. Being the end of the year, it doesn't seem to be slowing down, not for business and not in the news either.
Lots going on.
Yeah, there is lots going on. What do you guys have? I've got a few things.
Well, maybe we could touch on what we spoke about last week. So we had a number of things that were at the time of doing our podcast last week that were being resolved. So Boris Johnson has now won in a landslide victory in the UK elections.
Bojo.
So it looks like Brexit is going to get done.
They got the voters to support it. Yeah. So they can go in saying they've got a mandate now.
They absolutely can. So that's a big deal.
Well, I saw a headline. I didn't read the article about Skexit, that apparently Scotland are entertaining the idea of leaving Britain and going back to the EU.
Oh, they've been entertaining that for a long time, though. Yeah.
They had a referendum on that only a few years ago, didn't they?
I think so, yeah. Within the last 5 years, just off the top of my head.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yep. But there's probably going to be a renewed impetus for it now.
Mm.
Just like there's been impetus in Australia for us to become a republic.
It keeps coming back.
There's a group of people that really, really want it. I don't think it really impacts me day to day, so what does that matter?
Yeah.
But it is a bigger deal for a country like Scotland, where you are part of a union in the United Kingdom.
Yep.
We've also seen a resolution, or at least a partial resolution, to the US-China trade war.
Yes.
That's removed another big piece of uncertainty hanging over real estate and financial markets as well. Which is nice. So, yep.
So what's happened on financial markets as a result of these things?
Well, the markets have generally responded positively over the last week. It hasn't been a huge rally. There was a nice rally on Monday night our time, and on Monday in Australia, even on Friday in Australia. It's not been the runaway stock market announcement that's impacted, but certainly it's been much more positive than what we saw a week or two prior.
Oh, that is nice. Very good.
We've also got fines.
Whoa, yes, we do.
Jesus, see, it's the, I tell you what, the ATO's had a nice little present, and so has ASIC. They've had a nice little present. Lots of wins there.
Yeah.
Because of financial institutions playing up and mucking up.
That's right.
So
that's right.
Do the managers there get big bonuses? Because they're all coming just in time for Christmas, aren't they? Well, I wonder how this has played out.
I think they're getting a lump of coal. Yes. Coal this year.
Yep.
So we've had Westpac. We spoke about Westpac that was looking down the barrel of possibly up to a $3 billion fine as a result of its AUSTRAC breaches. Today we just find out that Westpac's being hit with another $9 million fine for providing inappropriate financial advice.
Right. Wow.
And breaching the best interest duties. But then this week also, in fact, it only just came out last night, that National Australia Bank is now staring down the barrel of a potential $10 billion fine.
Ouch.
For once again breaching the rules around charging fees for no service. So this was a matter that was highlighted in the Royal Commission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I remember this one. And it's now starting to evolve to the point that the National Australia Bank could take the chocolates for the biggest fine out of all of the four majors to date.
Wow.
$10 billion, which is an enormous amount.
Yep.
Now, whether or not it actually gets to that quantum, because I think a $10 billion fine would probably destabilize National Australia Bank.
Mm.
I mean, while these banks are highly profitable businesses,
it's not in the best interest to destabilize.
Yeah, this is going to put an enormous amount of financial duress on National Australia Bank if the fine gets that high. Mm. So this is not like, you know, this is a drop in the ocean. It's not going to kill National Australia Bank, but it will certainly see their share price fall by a substantial amount.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm. I'd be doubtful if the fine came back as that big. I mean, sure, that's the potential
Correct.
Fine, but I would be surprised. It doesn't need to be that big to achieve the desired results.
Mm.
And it would have some adverse consequences for the financial system, because bank needs to maintain capital ratios.
They do.
In order to continue doing what they do.
Well, there was a change recently as well for Westpac on that, I think.
No, this is actually
$500 million.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Yes, yeah. I think. Sorry, I haven't seen it. I know it was one of the banks. I can't remember whether or not it was NAB or Westpac as a result of these announcements, but. Certainly, banks are going to have to raise additional capital to shore up their capital requirement ratios. So that'll be – and any time you raise additional capital to sock away some safety net there, that's going to be a drag on earnings.
Mm. That's right. Well, we've been saying not to be invested in banks anyway for lots of reasons. So there you go. If you're listening to this podcast and you're still holding on to banks it's not exactly a growth investment. You've probably got more liabilities than opportunities.
So I just Googled it, which is easy to do. So Westpac was hit with the $500 million capital charge over their AUSTRAC scandal. So they now have a common equity tier one capital ratio increased by $500 million.
Yeah, and there's talk that National Australia Bank might actually have to raise another $1 billion to shore up its capital requirement ratios as a result of these fines that are likely to come about.
Jeez. So not good news for the banks.
Well, and it doesn't get any better whilst we're on the topic.
No,
really.
Go on, Brett.
Well, the RBA outlined the threat of technological change. So you were talking about neobanks.
That's right.
And obviously with the change of technology and also the open banking regime. So the RBA are flagging that there is a concern. So they've got a head of financial stability by the name of Jonathan Kearns. Never really heard of him prior, but he's gone on record and telling the Australian Finance and Banking Conference this week that the changes could erode and maybe even eradicate the bank's historical advantage in credit assessment.
Mm.
So he's saying that, all of it contends it's only available in an age where Australians are wrestling control of their data back.
Yep.
You know, through the consumer data right. And institutions to be coerced by the open banking regime when it goes live next year.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, the what do we call it, an oligopoly, I guess, the big four have had, is under threat.
There you go. Yep.
Yeah.
Mm. So good news for consumers, getting more choice, and lots of bad news for the banks. Mm. Also, I guess, bad news is it bad news? The government's mid-year economic update has come out in the last week saying that the predicted surplus for the federal government which had been estimated at $7.1 billion as a surplus, has been downgraded to only $5 billion as a surplus. However, that would be the first surplus delivered in a good number of years since, I think, 2011 or something.
That's a bittersweet sort of
scenario. Bittersweet. It's a reduced surplus, but it's still a surplus. Which is nice.
Yeah.
Although we've spoken previously about a government, on the one hand, pursuing surpluses, on the other hand, having the opportunity to invest in infrastructure and spend money to support the economy rather than pursuing a surplus when the economy is weak. Next year's surplus had been forecast at $11 billion and is now estimated at $6.1 billion.
So almost half. Any major contributor to that?
Well, the drought is one contributor. The drought is a big contributor.
That is.
Additional spending on aged care, following from the Aged Care Royal Commission, and GST receipts being down generally speaking.
As a result of a sluggish retail environment.
Yeah, that's right. But there is some good news for revenue. And that is one of the tech giants has actually been not hit with, but has settled to an amount of tax with the ATO.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, the ATO is now also filling their coffers as well.
Yep.
Do you have something on that, Joel, or do you want me to go into it?
Oh, well, you've got it, so I can.
No,
I can help support.
You've probably got more than me.
Okay. Well, we've got Google, which follows in the trend of Facebook and Apple and Microsoft, that have all had to come to settlements with the Australian Taxation Office over tax bills. This mainly related to those companies claiming that they in overseas companies for selling products here in Australia. So it relates to revenue generation, GST, that had previously not been applied to those receipts. And the ATO has now successfully settled with those companies. And I suspect that those companies will now start to act and behave and continue to provide a financial benefit, like I think they should if they're going to start selling products
Absolutely.
Here in Australia. They should pay their fair share tax.
And I think it was pretty clear what was going on previously. So I don't know if anyone listening to this podcast would have experienced it, but even things like if you place a Google AdWords advertisement, you'd receive an invoice from Google Singapore.
Yeah.
It's like, hang on, but I'm an Australian business and I'm promoting to my Australian database and trying to get leads and you've invoiced me out of Singapore. Oh, it just seems a bit strange. And same with Facebook ads. You get an invoice out of Ireland.
Yeah.
And you just wonder, okay, how does that work?
Well, it works because Singapore is a very low tax environment and so is Ireland.
That's right. And it's under $1,000 so they don't need to add GST.
Yeah.
So, it was clearly just a way to get around it by changing your jurisdiction.
Well, and that settlement, Joel, with Google?
$481 million.
Ooh. Chump change for them.
Yeah, chump change for them. So it looks like here, I'm just having a quick look here, it looks as though across these settlements, so far the ATO has collected $1.25 billion from these settlements with the four majors in additional tax receipts.
Let's just put that in context.
That adds to the surplus.
I've got some figures on the total tax raise for the Australian government. The total tax collected is $495 billion. So to put it in context, if you've got a surplus of $5 billion, that means all of your budget estimates of revenue and your expenses, they're all within 1%. And you've come out with a 1% surplus, which is actually pretty impressive from a planning point of view, that you can contain all these uncertain revenues and expenses to that degree.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got some huge computing power and processing power and forecasting power in the government.
And he's a local too. It's all Frydenberg that delivers out there.
Good on you, Josh.
Yeah.
Running an Excel spreadsheet over there.
I'm sure that's all it is.
I'm sure it is. So who can tell me what is the greatest area of tax raising revenue? Where does the government, or who does the government, get most of its taxes from?
Personal income tax.
Correct. 46% of that revenue is from individuals paying income tax. And the second highest?
Real estate.
Yeah, stamp duty considered part of that?
No, because this is federal.
Federal.
Okay.
GST?
GST.
Well, close. It's GST is third at 13.7%, but corporate tax, company tax, is 19.3%.
Income tax.
Yeah. Yep, that's right. The next highest tax is custom duties and excise tax. Taxes coming in at 8%, and then a few smaller figures to round it out.
Have you ever seen those stickers on the petrol bowsers? In regards to how much of the cost of fuel is actually the cost of fuel.
The real cost. Yes,
right. So the actual oil. And how much is actually excise? Well,
no, I haven't.
Taxes and levies and fees.
Oh, yeah, look, I don't quote me on this, but, you know, I do recall seeing, you know, those stickers suggesting to be more than 50% of the cost of the fuel is just excise and GST and other import duties and stuff like that.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I think America still has the lowest cost. I mean, you buy it in gallons over there, not litres, and their gallon price is probably still cheaper than our litre.
Yeah.
Well, it's getting close. Anyway.
All right. So, gents, we're pretty relaxed today.
Yeah.
Yep.
A little bit loose.
Yeah.
As I have another slurp of my cold beverage. Is anyone actually bringing any topics to today's podcast?
Well, what about some predictions?
Yeah,
what about,
that's a good idea.
And what about even having a look back at what's happened over the course of the past 12 months and what we might expect for the next 12 months?
Yeah, okay.
So I recall we had a chat around marijuana stocks earlier this year.
Remember that? Yeah. Pot stocks.
Pot stocks. So
We could have celebrated that in our last podcast for the year.
We could have done an Elon Musk on Joe Rogan's show.
Yeah, we should have. In
fact, what are we thinking? Why have we got these beers here?
I know.
That's right.
Wow, that'd be a different content.
our other favourite executive.
That's right.
Although I've got to say, the Tesla share price is actually doing pretty reasonably well over the last little bit. So
there you go.
The Tesla charity price.
Yeah, exactly. So, Tesla's actually give it to Elon. He's turned the share price around, at least from a low of $180 in June to today. Last night, the stock closed at $393. So, some big turnarounds happening at Tesla. But we did talk about the marijuana stocks and the bubble that was taking place in pot stocks. Well, it turns out, and thanks to Brett, who got this article for me, it turns out that shorting marijuana stocks was the most profitable trade of 2019.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Almost $1 billion was made by fund managers who were betting against pot stocks.
Oof.
In fact, we spoke about the Tilray IPO that occurred earlier this year. I think it was earlier this year. It might have been late last year. When Tilray listed, it went from about $20 up to about $240 in the space of about 2 or 3 months.
Oof.
And we said, geez, that looked like a bit of a bubble. And sure enough, it's back down at $20 today. So
we sort of had two. There was the pot stocks, and I know there's no data on this at the moment, but we also had the fake meat businesses that we sort of also didn't think stood up to valuation.
Well, it was more not so much a concern, and in each of these examples, it wasn't so much the concern around whether or not the products were any good or not. It was more around just the valuation and the frothiness that was coming in the financial markets, particularly in the IPO markets. And so we have seen, so Tilray got up to a high of $300, intraday high of $300. It listed at $20. It's now down below $20. If we have a look at Beyond Meat, B-Y-N-D, I'll just bring this ticker up. Beyond Meat got to a high of, got to a high of $222, looks like. $230 and now today it's down at $80. We had Zoom as well. Zoom was the
video conferencing software.
It got to a high of $105 and today it's trading around $67. So now, in each of these cases, we mentioned that, hey, you know, Beyond Meat probably going to be a pretty decent product.
Yeah.
We've got nothing against the product. It was just the valuation, trading at 80 times sales. How does that make any sense? And it was the same with Zoom video communication. We use Zoom in here. It's a great product. It allows us to have conference calls with our clients interstate and overseas and who can't make it into the city for whatever reason. The product worked really well, but once again, 80 times sales as a valuation just didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And then you saw the froth in WeWork as well.
Yeah.
And today we also see that WeWork has just done a deal with Goldman Sachs to put in place a new credit line of $1.75 billion to bail out the business that was floating for a valuation north of $40 billion. And as soon as it couldn't get that valuation and the IPO failed, almost went bankrupt because this was a business that was losing over $1 billion a year.
Yep.
So we've seen that the CEO has now been booted, although he's making a pretty penny. He leaves with a payout of over $1 billion just to hang around and provide consulting.
Wow.
In a company that's losing money and shareholders are losing value. That's amazing. Yeah.
So we had some crazy things going on in the stock market this year. And in fact, it's actually been a very strong year in the stock market, largely because of the crash that we had, or the mini crash that we had just before Christmas time last year. So most developed equity markets are up by about 15 to 20%. Last time I checked, I think on average, the developed world equity markets are up about 18% on average.
Well, I'm looking at a number of our investors' returns in the last 12 months, and I'm seeing a one-year return of 38%, 40% on our portfolio. And it's a really nice year-to-date valuation when there's a low in the markets, you know, a nice 20% drop leading up.
Louis, to get that.
No, this is Joel's. This is Joel's investments. They're working.
Yeah, indeed.
Yep. All right.
Well, in terms of, so there's some of the disasters this year. The disasters in the property market, I don't have any significant ones like that, but the one that I thought was a standout this year was Purple Bricks.
Remember
that fixed fee agency that did a heap of marketing and saturated us on TV and radio for a while and ended up just pulling out of the Australian market. I think, well, they may still be around in a small part of the market, but they're definitely not going to be around for much longer here. So the Australian real estate industry just didn't gel with it and the market didn't take to it and they've retreated. So they were a fairly, you know, they hit the market hard and then they realized it wasn't working. So, yeah, I mean, they're publicly listed, I believe, in the UK. So that's going to hurt them.
Yep. So, yeah, so they just didn't understand the culture of how we do real estate transactions.
Yeah. Well, and also I think that the, you know, it's hard to see an agent really delivering valuable service and follow up and really adding the value when they're only on a fixed fee. They'll just sort of treat it as a commodity and not really focus on it. Which I think when people are selling an asset that's, you know, probably their biggest asset, they want to make sure they're getting all the TLC they can.
Yeah. If you want to look at an example of a good disruptor, Richard Branson has been doing it for a long time.
Indeed.
And he has done it well, and he's also done it unsuccessfully as well.
Yep.
So if you read any
Virgin
of his
– Virgin Cola.
Yeah, that's right, Virgin Cola.
Yeah.
And in fact, that's exactly what I was thinking of. And he started to actually set out some rules around – what type of industries you try and disrupt and which ones you leave alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty important.
Based on personal experience, was it?
Based on his personal experience. Yeah, that's right. And I think when you take on a culture like Australian real estate, you're in for a nasty surprise, similar to when Starbucks tried to come into the Australian market and dominate it, like it does dominate the US market, dominate the Japanese market, but it just didn't gel with our established coffee culture.
Give us some more credit than that.
There you go.
Their coffee wasn't up to it.
No, that's right.
No, that's right.
Yep. Yep, exactly. So that's we're getting in the boot in on a few things, aren't we, fellas?
Yeah, well, we're looking back, Louis.
Well, what about some positive things then? What are we expecting for next year?
Look, I'll kick off because I've got some information from a survey that was done recently by the Property Update website in combination with your property investment magazine, your investment property magazine. So obviously it's biased towards the respondents, the 1,800-odd respondents are obviously property investors. They're avid at looking at property. So it's not a true reflection of the overall, you know, population of Australia, but it gives us some insight as to what they're thinking is going to happen next year in residential real estate. So of the survey, the respondents thought, is next year a good time to buy? 68% believe next year is a good time to buy property.
Okay.
Okay. Right. That doesn't mean they're all going to, because some of them probably aren't in the position, but they think, yes, the market and the time to buy, you know, for the future and growth is positive. And of those, 20% were planning to buy their own new home in 2020.
Right.
So not just so for investment.
First home buyers.
Not necessarily first home. They might be upgrading, might be changing home. Okay. So 21 in 5 of the respondents were thinking of buying a new home, first or upgrading. And that's out of that, though, 43% believe that property values would increase by 0 to 5% next year. So if I was going to put a prediction on where property's going to go next year, and of course, you know, we keep putting a caveat over this that there's not a single market, there's markets within markets.
Yep.
But if we're just going to use, say, the CoreLogic data that comes out and says the national dwelling values have gone up or down, I think if we come back in a year's time, I think we'll be somewhere between 2 and 5% up on where we are today. That's my prediction across all of the Australian residential market.
Okay.
I'll take that.
Yeah.
I'll take
that. So that's kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah. What about Melbourne?
I think Melbourne will be just slightly ahead of that, probably in the 4 to 6, 7% range.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's
I think Melbourne, Melbourne and Sydney, Melbourne will probably, I think Melbourne will probably be the best performer.
Right.
If we're looking at it.
Big call.
Yeah. I think Melbourne, if we look at it from today to this time next year, I think Melbourne will have the highest growth rate of all.
Of all capital cities.
Of all capitals, yeah. Yeah. There'll be other areas that'll still do well.
Yeah.
But capitals, yeah, I think Sydney's still a bit overheated. Brisbane's got a long way to go, but it's always a bit slower.
Yeah.
I think Melbourne, you know, especially when you look at it at a value, Sydney's certainly the most expensive, Melbourne second, Brisbane third. Adelaide could be a sleeper, but I'm not seeing reasons why. The population's not growing as well.
Yeah.
Melbourne's still got the biggest population growth, and by all metrics, probably the you know, biggest shortage of housing according to the data. Yeah. So I think that's going to drive prices more in Melbourne than anywhere else.
Yeah, yeah.
Great prediction, Brett.
Well, I'll throw one more, as we're talking about it, that impacts property. Interest rates. I think we'll see them drop before they'll rise. I think next year the RBA rate's 0.75. I think it'll drop to 0.5 in the first half of next year, but not beyond that is what I'm thinking.
All right. One more cut to come. Mm. Okay. Well, that'll flow through to property prices, as they always do, for sure.
Yep.
Okay. Very good, Brett.
Thank you.
What about you, John?
Let's see what happens in 12 months. Come back in a year and tell me what you think.
We'll play this recording back.
Yeah. Well, I think that if you're looking for some positive news around stocks going forward, I think I'd be one of the biggest bulls in the market right now.
A raging bull.
Raging bull, yeah.
All right.
So in tune with the theme of 2020, my prediction is that I believe the US stock market, the S&P 500, will rise by at least 20% next year.
20%.
Bang.
Oh.
2020.
There's a big call. Damn. There's a big call.
Wow.
Now, look, the reason driving that is we're now starting to see a huge amount of cash come back into equities, flow back into equities that was withdrawn from equities over the past 12 months. We're seeing interest rates being decreased. We're seeing a steepening in the yield curve. We're seeing financial conditions are very benign. Seeing corporate profits are starting to go back into a growth phase again. We've now had a resolution to the Trump and China, or at least we've had a partial resolution to the Trump and China trade issues. We've now got some clarity around Brexit. So a couple of these big issues that have been hanging over us for a little while are starting to resolve themselves. And you're starting to see a breakout after a two-year sideways sort of corrective phase. You're seeing a breakout to the upside, not just in the US, but you're seeing it in Japan, you're seeing it in the UK, you're seeing it here in Australia, and also in Europe as well. So I'm going to say that what we're seeing right now are conditions that look very similar to 2017 after we had a 2015 and 16 sideways market. And the last time we went through that, I think the US stock market was up anywhere around about 25 to 30% in 2017.
So why aren't you predicting that much?
It's not 2020. It's not 2030.
Yeah. good call.
And one other, I've got another prediction. I think ANZ's going to be the next next one to get fined with at least a $500 million to a $1 billion fine being touted.
Yep.
If we've seen CBA, we've seen NAB, we've seen Westpac.
Yep. Yep.
Come on, as if ANZ aren't sitting on a gold on a landmine.
That's
right.
As well, absolutely has to be.
So
Yeah. All right. Let's take a brief break. We'll be back with more predictions.
For the good stuff.
Are you concerned about your finances? Maybe you're not sure if you'll have enough money to retire on. Or maybe you've received a redundancy, inheritance, or even a significant promotion, or perhaps a life-changing medical diagnosis. Regardless of your concern or financial position, United Global Capital's advisors are experts in the areas of strategic financial planning, taxation, superannuation and self-managed superannuation funds, risk management, estate planning, and investments. Don't let fate dictate your financial future. Take control today and contact United Global Capital for a no-cost, no-obligation financial strategy consultation. Simply call 03 8657 7640 or email info@ugc.net.au and book your appointment today.
And we're back. I have a few predictions as well, gentlemen.
Yeah, we're holding our breath. Let's hear this.
I think consumer confidence will grow and wages will grow.
Good. Whoa, let's hope so. I like that prediction. I hope it's
I think they'll start to grow. It always takes a long time for these numbers to filter through.
Yep.
But I think we'll see with stability coming into a lot of areas of markets and economies and people's lives this year, I think that stability will feed through to confidence, which feeds through to a bit more spending, which feeds more employment, which feeds just a little bit of wages growth starting to happen.
Mm-hmm. Just starting to happen. It's got a feel-good vibe to it. I like
it. Yeah, just a little bit. Just a little bit. And my other prediction is that you'll start to see the banks go into acquisition mode.
Really?
I think so, just on a small scale.
Acquisition of technology?
That's the way, Brett.
That, right.
Yeah. So I think you'll see, much like companies that reach the pinnacle, they just go out and buy other businesses.
Yeah, they can't innovate themselves.
Correct, yep. So you see like Facebook taking over Instagram.
Yeah.
An established pharmaceutical company taking over the smaller up-and-coming pharmaceutical company and buying their intellectual property.
Yeah.
I think you'll see the Australian banks buying other businesses to acquire their brands and their customer bases and to acquire their technology.
Mm.
So from a marketing perspective and from an actual integration perspective.
Yeah. Interesting. Mm. Interesting.
Mm. Yeah. Good calls, Louis.
Those are my predictions for next year.
Nice.
Yes. Excellent. And one more prediction.
Here we go.
Well, I have one more.
I think we will achieve 47 podcasts next year.
47. Okay, that's a good one.
Yeah, because we miss the occasional week, but we don't miss too many. Out of 52 weeks, I reckon we'll get 47 podcasts.
Nice.
So we are breaking, and our first podcast will be back in the week of the 13th of Jan. Will that be the first one?
I don't.
You tell us, Joel. You're the one in Hawaii.
So somewhere between the 13th and 20th, anyone that wants to put in their diary, maybe put the 20th as look for it online by then, just to be sure.
Right. Well, if we're making a promise, let's say the 1st of February. Under promise and over deliver.
Well, but there's a big prediction that none of us have called yet. And Joel, I know you'll agree. Louis, I'm not sure you will, but surely it's the year of the magpie.
Oh, yes. Indeed.
Collingwood Premiers 2020. Well, come on, go the pies.
And that's not as crazy as what it sounds, right? Because the last two times that we've won our grand final was at the turn of the decade. So
we love an
1990.
Even,
1990, and then we had 2010, and now it's 2020. So 2020 vision about next year's premiers, eh?
Good luck, fellas. Good luck. Oh, well, we saw Alex Rance announced his retirement.
Yeah, quite shocking today.
That is a bit of a shock. Yep. Yeah. So good for him. Good on
for
you.
For Collingwood.
Yes. Good career. Well done.
Good for Collingwood.
Decorated.
Yes.
Yeah. Good for West Coast. That's right.
Good for
relief to everyone in the forwards all across the AFL will be celebrating. There's a Christmas present.
And he'll
there, is
every
there is a guy. There is a guy.
There's a Santa Claus, you mean? Yeah.
And he's a Jehovah's Witness.
Yeah. That's right. Merry Christmas, Alex Rance. Oh, I can't say that. Hope you celebrate your retirement.
So I note that Alex Rance is giving up football because he wants to spend more time with his family and dedicate his more time towards his religion.
Yeah.
I don't know if Alex Rance realises that being an AFL footballer probably only requires you to turn up around about 25 hours a week. Going and working a full-time job probably requires anywhere between 40 and 50 hours
That's
a week.
That's right, yes.
And probably pays less depending on what he can get into.
Yeah.
That's right.
So, you know, maybe.
Might not be the right idea. Yeah. The right decision.
That's right. Yeah, you haven't freed up time. Yeah. You've lost time.
Yeah.
Oh, well, good on you. Absolutely. Moving on to the next phase
of your
life.
Congratulations to a great career anyway.
That's right. Absolutely.
Now, before we go on to our last segment, if that's where we're heading, I thought we'd close this year out with something I saw published in the Wall Street Journal by journalist Johan Norberg from the Cato Institute that gives us a feeling that all is pretty good in the world. Obviously, we talk all about a lot of things that can be disastrous, and there's always the doomsdayers and doomsayers out there. But here's a few things to take away to make you think that as we close out 2019, the world's doing a lot right. Okay, so first thing is that extreme poverty across the globe fell from 18.2% to 8.6%.
Over the last...
Good point. I didn't actually write that in this
right.
article.
Okay, it's so a big decrease though.
Big decrease. But anyway, it's dropping. So that's a good sign.
Excellent.
Yeah. Okay. Malaria in Africa has declined by 60%. And HIV by more than half.
Wow.
Fantastic.
So all good things.
Amazing. Yep. Amazing.
This was a good one too. Global mortality for children under the age of 5 has declined from 5.6% but to 3.9%.
Wonderful.
So, you know, we're better off health-wise. Yep. We're living. Mm. Death rates from air pollution globally has declined by 1/5.
Really?
That's a contentious one, isn't it?
Wow.
Because obviously,
there we go.
Yeah, unless you're in Sydney right now.
Yeah, different. I guess that is air pollution, true. Yep, but not from the typical reason.
No, that's right.
Yeah. So two more. Annual deaths from climate-related disasters declined by 1/3.
Wow. Okay.
And that's a 95% decrease from the 1960s.
Mm.
Now, the argument here on that particular one, though, is that climate-related disasters, so cyclones, landslides, those sorts of things.
Floods.
Floods, yeah, all of the above. Probably the reason that the deaths from those is not just because there's less disasters, because they're still around. It's probably because our ability to react and get to people and support them is probably better.
Yep.
And a lot of the cities or towns that are built in these areas are probably better equipped.
Mm.
So that's probably the reason. Not
that's
that
right.
the natural disasters aren't happening.
Yep. Yep. I think of building standards and earthquakes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're getting better. Last one, consumption of 66 of the 72 tracked natural resources has declined.
Right, okay. So we're becoming more efficient with our production.
Mm-hmm. And we're not taking as much out of the ground as we think we were.
Right.
Mm.
So we're taking less.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's actually declined. Even though you'd think consumption's increasing, there's more of us, population across the planet's probably bigger, we're actually using less of the Earth's resources than we used to.
Right. Wow.
So
very interesting statistics.
I think that's a nice thing, a nice series of statistics to take away.
Yeah. Yeah. That's wonderful.
Nice and cheery.
Yeah.
Nice.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas. There's my Christmas present for everyone.
Yeah. It is the end of a decade, and I've started seeing the end of decade lists coming out. The 50 must-watch films of the decade. And
what's the number one on that one? You remember?
Wall Street.
That was probably a previous decade, I think.
That was two decades ago. Wall Street 2.
Well, let's say the century.
Yeah, that didn't quite go.
you didn't get onto Wall Street 2? No, didn't enjoy it? It's not as good as the original.
Not many sequels are better.
Yeah. What's that song? I like your old stuff better than your new stuff.
Yep. Mm. Absolutely.
Yep. Okay. So I do have a topic for today, a real one, so don't think I would... finish the year without a personal tip or rant or whatever you want to call my segments. All right. So so I try and keep it related to not just personal finance. Yeah, that's the word now.
Eating lots of pie.
That's right. After supporting Carlton and United Breweries here in the office, start talking about finance. Peak performance. Personal finance and peak performance.
Say that five times fast.
Yeah. To get the most out of yourself. And this week I was looking up peak performance and rest and recovery. And it's so important as a peak performer in your field to give yourself decent times of rest. So I wanted to wish everyone a happy Merry Christmas and enjoy the break that you are probably taking over this time, although some people might be having a busy time of year this year. If so, well, good luck with your peak performance. Why is rest so important? Well, there's a few reasons why. If you look at a book called Peak Performance, written by a couple of scientists, they have a theory that you need stress in order to grow.
And then you need recovery.
But you also need recovery. That's right.
Absolutely.
You need the rest.
Yep.
And this applies to growing your knowledge, your skills, your experience, and the fundamental human body. If you're going to grow your muscles or you're going to grow your fitness or improve your health, you need to put your body through that that exercise. Same thing goes for our work. You need a period of stress and to really be put under the pump.
Yep.
And then you need to recover from that.
Yeah. But you can't just have it all stress. It just
That's right. If you don't have that recovery, you're just going to end up with burnout. So make sure you give yourself permission to take a break.
Switch off. Relax. Awesome.
Yeah, really do that.
And I think for a lot of people, that stress recovery phase too, sleep is critical. If ever you're injured, sleep really helps. You know, if you work hard in physical training, sleep. So, yeah, not just drinking and partying all the time whilst you got the time off. Get in plenty of good shut-eye so you come back refreshed.
Exactly. So I would say get shut-eye and good rest and, of course, have a good time as well. The other thing that I would suggest is make sure you're actually switching off your mind. And there's a bit of a craze coming out of Silicon Valley at the moment where some of these crazes do come from. It's called dopamine fasting. Have you heard of that?
Right, okay. No, I haven't.
Nope.
I've heard of Burning Man and I've heard of...
Yeah, plenty of other good things are coming out of that area.
So the thought is that when our brains have an injection of dopamine, it's actually not very good for the attention span and concentration and actually being intensely focused on something. So every time you pick up your mobile phone and look at the screen, you get a dopamine hit, which is why our phones are addictive. So part of being good at resting is to switch off your phone.
Leave it at home.
Leave it at home. Don't spend your rest time scrolling, sitting on the couch scrolling on your phone. Spend it on the couch reading a book or spend it on the couch, but actually just close your eyes.
Yeah.
That's okay. That's the best quality rest you can get is where you properly switch off your mind.
Awesome.
Nice.
Awesome. I'm going to do that.
Good for you, Joel.
Great work.
All right. We'll take one more break and then we'll be back with our favorite segment.
Want to learn the strategies that have achieved returns more than double the return of the average superannuation fund? Each day, clients of United Global Capital are using strategies and tactics that were once thought the domain of the professional investor or the super rich. Book your seat at UGC's Financial Fast Track Seminars, where you'll learn the science behind selecting high-performance stocks and real estate, how you can participate in advanced strategies like property development, short selling, and international investments, as well as how to protect your wealth against major adverse market events. To secure your seat, simply go to ugc.net.au/events and select the seminar that suits your needs. Seats are limited, so book your spot now.
Here we go.
You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious.
All final right. One for the year.
Final for the year.
I'll lead off because I'm going to steal Joel's thunder.
Oh, go on.
Well, maybe not. I don't know if he remembers. I think he did this one around this time last year. Yeah. Pornhub.
Okay.
They've released their 2019 year in review.
Okay, right.
Wait. Year in review or year in rear view?
Could
rear,
be both.
No, it's the rear end
review. Yeah, rear end review. It's more fitting. So
I bet it's fitting.
You know, things are slowing down. You know, they've only had 42 billion visits this year.
Oh, my goodness. Site,
up from the 33.6 last year. Now, I don't think the population's grown by 8 billion across the planet, so we're doing more of it, by the way. That's 115 million per day.
Wow.
That's, and 39 billion searches were entered, 77,000 per minute.
Whoa.
Now, this is probably the one that's the most, you cannot be serious. 6.83 million hours of content were uploaded in 2019.
Whoa. You cannot be serious.
Whoa. So to help you understand what that means, that's 169 years of content to watch uploaded this year. That's just this on year. Top of what they've already done. So if you started watching porn in 1850, you would still be watching them today. Crazy. And look, there's plenty more stats, but I think you get the picture.
Yeah. Oh, geez. Do you get the picture?
Oh, it's a rising industry.
Or the video.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, nice, Joel. I got it.
Anyway, I've got a man in Perth. So we've been going through a bit of a heat wave, not just in Melbourne. We had a 39 degree day yesterday, and bloody hell, it was hot once you stepped outside.
And it's going to be worse tomorrow.
43 degrees tomorrow on Friday. Perth have been going through the same issue.
I have.
And so on the 14th of December, one man over in Perth thought he would go and check out and see just how far he could take this heat wave. He simply placed a 3.3-pound or 1.5-kilogram roast pork into his old Datsun. I'm surprised that he still has an old Datsun.
Yeah.
Perth, mate.
And the temperature in there got to 177.8 degrees Fahrenheit or 81 degrees Celsius.
Wow.
And sure enough, he cooked a beautiful roast pork in his Datsun on the 14th of December because of the heat wave.
Jeez. That's a hot rod.
Did he do it driving around? Would have cooked himself.
That's right. Now, I'm always talking about outsourcing those tasks that we don't want to do, that someone low paid than you can do on your behalf, like cleaning.
Yep.
Get a cleaner in your house so you can spend more time either working on your career. Here's one. You can pay someone to come and decorate your Christmas tree. Oh,
really?
You can. That's right.
Just a young teenager or something like that.
Don't worry about the family tradition and having fun with your kids. Just get someone else to do it. Yeah.
Shortcut.
Be a quality parent.
Well, it'll take some rest.
It'll take some rest. That's right.
So maybe we should be supporting this.
Very good. There you go. Well, thanks for joining us, listeners. We hope you have a wonderful break. We're done for the year in more ways than just this podcast, and thank God for that.
Well, and just before we go to all the concerned listeners out there, I believe Stephanie will be back next year.
She's going to be back next year.
She apologises for not being around for a little while, but we will be getting her back to rein us in next year.
I think we need her.
Yeah. It's a bit wild in here after a little while.
It does, yeah. Would she have drunk a beer with us
or something?
She would have had a rosé or something like that.
There you go. Much more classy.
Yes.
Good on you, Steph. All right. Catch you next time, listeners.
Thanks,
see you next
guys.
Year.